And we're talking today to Mike Miles, and you're from the
City of Portland.
City of Portland, the director of HR.
Yes, sir.
Wow, that's great. Now, how many employees there at the City of Portland?
About 1,375.
That's great. You guys do a great job. You know, I certainly, our operation is right there in downtown Portland, right next to Monument Square. And, you know, you guys have a lot of area to cover.
Yes, indeed. And I'm very proud of the workforce.
Yes, you should be. Well, we're going to be talking today a little bit about maintaining a non-union status. So let's talk about the credibility statement.
Okay.
How many unions do you deal with in the City of Portland?
Right now, it's eight.
Eight unions.
Mm-hmm.
Challenges with that?
It's yes, it is challenging to work with labor unions, to be sure.
And what are some of the biggest challenges that sometimes face for a HR department?
Well, when you're in a unionized environment, the challenges that you face that are unlike being in a non-union environment include basically having to talk about a whole bunch of things you don't have to talk about with employees, such as negotiating wages, negotiating starting times, ending times, terms and conditions of employment, benefits programs, health insurance, work rules. Virtually every element of work life is regulated by a union contract. And, you know, if you have that situation, you can work with it and make it work, as we've done very well with the City of Portland. But I guess my point of view is, as an HR professional of 3.5 decades duration, is it's easier as managers to work with a non-union organization.
Well, I would think certainly if you're thinking about the challenges that are faced, I know certainly at CMA we deal with a number of organizations that have unions. And sometimes, especially when it comes to discipline, or especially when it comes to you know, employees not necessarily living up to their end of the bargain, having to do with work quality.
Certainly.
These are areas that stand out, and this is no secret, stand out as a challenge when you're dealing with a union environment.
No question about that.
What are some of the things that you recommend from the standpoint of how do you keep and maintain a non-union status?
Well, I guess my starting point for this discussion would be and looking at a union website and say, and take a look at why people organize. And let me read from AFSCME's Council 8, which is in Ohio's website. They say, Ohio's public employees, nonprofit employees, and other workers who provide public services are looking for fairness on the job. They want reasonable, consistent, and fairly enforced policies, and a voice in making those policies. They want to earn good wages, have affordable quality health care benefits, and a secure retirement. That statement covers most of the ground. And fundamentally, from my experience, it's about fairness. It's about being respected and feeling respected.
Do you think that, and I kind of know the answer, but I'll see your perspective, and maybe you not have the same perspective as I, that that has to do with who the supervisors are, who the management is, how they treat the employees?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I know from doing attitude surveys that there's two questions that I pay more attention to than any other questions on an attitude survey. And the first one is, do you like your supervisor? Do you get along with your supervisor? And the other is, do you feel respected? And if either of those two questions is answered in the negative, most everything else is going to be negative. And if those two answers are positive, the rest of the answers are likely going to be positive. Those are critical issues, how a supervisor treats employees with respect and dignity and in an interactive fashion rather than in a dictatorial fashion. And treats them with a kind of respect and courtesy that you would expect of a decent human being.
You know, sometimes employers or supervisors or management have never really been trained on how to be supervisors. And they think it's this big, long, tough process to be trained in those areas. And while there are development, no question, there are some basic fundamentals, aren't there, in terms of just dealing with employees in general.
Oh, absolutely. Some of those that would occur to me, and I would welcome you to fill in, would be having people knowing what the rules are. And that's the starting point. If there are unwritten rules and unwritten expectations, how can people possibly know what they are? How can people abide by them? How can people avoid violating them? That's the first thing.
And with that, I'll just add that that's part of, if you want to call it, an employee handbook.
Yes.
You know, there are cultures that develop within an organization, and certainly the longer an organization has for its history, there are, I call, the unwritten behind-the-scene rules, things you just don't do, things you must do, things you should do, things that will, you know, make the supervisor not happy, you know. Those are the things that necessarily aren't written down. But if you can minimize those, you really do improve the environment.
And so I think that's a critical one. And the second one is giving people reasonable expectations about what the work is to be done, and enforcing those expectations thoughtfully, appropriately, even-handedly. The cry of unfairness is the one that resonates with people who are organizing unions. The bad supervisor is the most frequently cited reason for union organizations starting.
And that talks about communication.
Absolutely.
You know, I have certainly seen, I'm sure you have, supervisors who are actually very good. Mm-hmm. And they want to be fair, they want to do the right thing, but they struggle in their ability to communicate well with employees. Either they're maybe more introverted, or they don't necessarily use body language or facial expressions that match the words that come out of their mouths. And that's where some of the trouble really does start.
And, you know, Dave, I think one of the other key areas that's linked to that is people don't innately have good conflict resolution skills. You have to be taught them. You have to learn them. You have to practice them. And a lot of people, probably most people, are afraid of conflict. They back away from it. And when you're dealing with employees, and if you have a problem with an employee and you're not addressing it appropriately, and you're letting it build up and build up and build up and build up, and then all of a sudden you're loading down on them, it's a problem.
Well, you know, we're talking about communication, but there's also the problem of someone taking it personally.
Yes.
You know, the emotion side. Mm-hmm. They disrespected me. They don't understand my authority. They didn't do what I told them to do. They're challenging my authority. And sometimes supervisors, at least from what I've seen, have to kind of like almost bite their tongue a little and not take it personal. This is business.
Oh, absolutely. And as a supervisor, you're held to a higher standard than the non-supervisory employees about dealing with conflict situations and taking it personally. There's a certain level of you got to put up with stuff that might be a little uncomfortable as a supervisor. Listening more, for example, and holding your tongue, as you're saying.
Yeah, well, it's flexing, right? To flexing to the emotion and to the challenge that's in front of you. Also realizing, I tell supervisors all the time, you're on stage. You know, you're being watched in everything you do. So that moment you think that you can get away with something, somebody is looking somewhere from some angle, some direction, and will catch you doing the thing that you said you should not do. So just don't do it.
And there's a hundred different ways of being respectful on the job. Asking questions of people, inviting their expertise, being interactive as opposed to directorial. Is one way of engaging people, and the engagement process is key to a good supervisory employee working relationship.
No, those are all key areas. You know, when at the bottom line, at the end of the day, pay is an issue, but it's never the first issue. You know, when you're talking about paying a fair wage, as long as you're within the ball game, I find that pay for most surveys, and you can go nationwide, you can go regionally, it doesn't really matter. Pay is almost like number 8 or 9 on the list. It's not necessarily about being the highest paid, but it's being respected for what you're getting paid for.
And if you're in a position in the market where you can't offer the highest wages in the market, you can still be competitive because you're a good place to work, because you treat people well, because you use the wages that you offer sensitively, thoughtfully, and fairly. And you you bring other non-wage things into the equation. Flexibility, respect, decency, job satisfaction.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely correct. And that certainly you can make up for those. You're listening to the HR Power Hour. We're talking with Mike Miles, the Director of Human Resources for the City of Portland. And we will be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Hi, this is Peter Boldick at Harvest Hill Farms. For those folks who are looking for healthy eating alternatives, we have been raising natural range-fed beef and poultry right here in the great state of Maine for over 15 years. Let us introduce you to our Never Ever program. Our animals are never ever introduced to growth hormones or antibiotics, only raised as nature intended. We are conveniently located on Route 26 in Mechanic Falls. To find out more, call us at 998-5485 or go to our website, harvesthillfarms.com. That's harvesthillfarms.com.
Are you frustrated with medical care today? Does it make you angry that your doctor spends more time looking at the computer screen than at you? Does it seem like your doctor is out the door in 5 minutes? There is a better alternative. At Champy Family Practice, Dr. Michael Champy and his dedicated staff make taking care of patients their priority. They are a cash-friendly direct pay practice, which is the perfect option for people with no insurance, high deductibles, and health savings accounts. Unlike other practices, they post their prices in the office and even online. Get modern medical care delivered the old-fashioned way. For more information, call ChampyFamilyPractice.com. That's C-I-A-M-P-I. Or call 774-1222. Champy Family Practice is located at 380 Lincoln Street in South Portland. Champy Family Practice. Continuing a tradition of medical excellence in Greater Portland since 1959.
And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And we are talking with Mike Miles today. He's the Director of Human Resources for the City of Portland. And our topic is maintaining non-union status. Mike, again, thank you for being on the show.
My pleasure.
All right, so, you know, we've been talking about the reasons why supervisors sometimes bring on unions themselves by not really paying attention to what the employees need, or organizations not putting the employees first. Let's talk a little bit about, for a second here, on what you think is the training that can be provided to supervisors to help prevent this.
Well, I think one of the very first things we need to train supervisors in is, what are the organization's policies? You know, you need, in a non-union organization, to have a disciplinary policy that is sensible and thoughtful and fair. You need to have work rules that are well known and that are well articulated. And if the supervisors don't know them, they can't enforce them and they can't communicate them. So that's the first thing.
Well, you know, just to interject a second, yeah. It's interesting. We do HR audits quite mm-hmm. a bit, and we do interview supervisors. And I am constantly amazed by what they don't know. And it's not because they don't want to know. It's because they're worried about their day-to-day job,
sure.
And they forget all the hundreds, sometimes mm-hmm. many hundreds of rules that are out there. So you're absolutely right. Reminding them of it and refreshing courses is critical.
A second thing that the supervisors need to know is conflict resolution. You can't just launch into conflict without some skill building. And I think that is something that'll get supervisors out of a lot of problems, probably more than anything else that we can do in terms of training. A third thing that that I think is useful to train supervisors is how to deal with employees as employees who have whole lives. So they bring themselves to work, all of themselves to work. And if they're going to be fully present in the workplace, The supervisor's got to be able to engage them fully. And a fourth thing.
Well, because you don't know what's going on at home, right?
Exactly.
You don't
know.
That's true. And sometimes it's not that they're not doing a good job because they don't want to. There are factors
certainly
that are out there.
And one example of that, and I cite this in my new employee orientation, is domestic violence is a problem in the culture. A certain percentage of people who come to work are going to be experiencing that. It would be useful for a supervisor to know what the signals for that are and what the resources for that might be. It's useful as well to know, for example, about drug and alcohol policy and a substance abuse policy. And how do you engage with people who have those sorts of struggles in their lives and stay appropriate on the job? And then the final sort of catch-all category of supervisory training that I think is important is in how to interview and how to hire people in ways that go beyond the gut and move into more analytical ways. Listening skills, supervisory skills, all of that. None of this stuff is innate. All of this stuff is learned, and it's possible to become a really good supervisor. It's hard to become a really good supervisor without knowing this stuff.
No, and it's not taught in schools.
Yeah.
Let's put it this way. It is learned, and I think that it is critical that an organization, a company, provide that type of training for it. You know, we were talking during the break about, you said you had an epiphany about a story that you have that really brought it home. So please share with the audience.
Sure. Before I worked for the city of Portland, I worked with a social services agency that's called Youth Alternatives, which became Youth Alternatives Ingraham, which is now the Opportunity Alliance. And the ethic of the place is one of open communication, open door, open financials. The openness of the organization was astounding to me, and it came to a point of insight for me when we had an all agency day, 400 people in a room. The top management team sat in chairs in front of the audience. Somebody passed a hat, and everybody was given slips of paper and the opportunity to write questions. They put into the hat and were read anonymously. An organization that was so confident in its openness and its receptivity to employees that it permitted anonymous questions to be asked in a large public forum, I thought that was probably the best example ever of an open and respectful organization that dared to listen even to with the possibility of being embarrassed.
Well, you know, that doesn't happen a lot. I'll tell you, in the business world, it certainly doesn't. And, you know, if they're willing to communicate even publicly about their challenges and then address them, you're right, that is a key takeaway for some organization to be able to do that. You know, one of the things that I know you were talking to me about before we got to the show was about how to treat people with respect. We talked about it during the first segment. And, you know, you kind of have some tips, if you want to call it, that kind of fall into the example you just provided, but also some tips. So can you share them?
I would be happy to. The thoughts I have about that are, first of all, involve employees in decision-making about the work that they do and even about the direction of the organization. People on the front lines know things that we don't, as managers, always know. Second, you got to pay people fairly. The pay rules ought to be explicit. People ought to be confident they know how things work, even if they may not know the particulars of what each individual is earning. People generally find out. So I operate with the assumption that people will know and that they'll be upset if I do something that's not appropriate. So don't do things that are inappropriate. Third, make your policies clear, explicit, and available. Fourth, to the extent that it's possible, provide promotional mobility for employees. If they got someplace to go within the organization, that's certainly a positive. Developing dispute resolution mechanisms that work. Grievance processes. You want to be able to have any problems that you have resolved at the lowest possible level of visibility and within the company if you can. And so providing those dispute resolution mechanisms may be inconvenient for you as a manager and as a business owner, but it's really important to do. Addressing conflict directly and immediately, letting stuff fester, is one of the biggest problems that in any organization. And that requires a bit of courage, but it requires probably more training and the courage to just address it. Treating people with respect involves, as I was saying about youth alternatives, open books, open doors, open communication, and thanking people on a regular basis, appreciating people sincerely and with particular detailed appreciations of what they do and how they do and how that affects you. And finally, confidential attitude surveys are really, really useful. You really don't know what your people think about you on the full range of issues unless you ask them. And you won't know what they really think unless you ask them confidentially. You'll get a load of information. And finally, if you do an attitude survey, you got to tell people what you found and what you're going to do about it. Because if you can't be in a position of raising expectations and then doing nothing and letting them fall, because people will never respond again.
Well, it's credibility.
Yeah,
credibility
absolutely.
To yourself, credibility to the organization.
And you'll get heaps of credit for having asked the question.
So if all of this is done correctly and all of this is done well, you will maintain non-union status?
That's most of the time the outcome.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. I think, look, at the end of the day, it's not against unions.
Mm-hmm.
It's about maintaining an environment where people feel valued.
Absolutely.
And don't feel that they have to collectively join something mm-hmm. against the organization to advocate for them. Mm-hmm. That's really what you're right. It's mm-hmm. really what it's all about. You know, it's funny. I have heard that you personally have a huge CD and record collection. Is that correct?
Yes, actually it is. I've probably seen 1,000 concerts, literally 1,000 concerts in my life. And I've skinnied my record collection down from about 15,000 down to only 3,000. And I'm a massive consumer of music. It feeds my soul, and it's great.
Well, tell me about, you know, since we have another minute here, mm-hmm. what's one of the more famous records you have, maybe?
Well, probably my most collectible record. Might be a different answer to the question you asked, but I have the Beatles' White Album on white vinyl.
Wow.
From France. And it's, I don't know why that's such a prized possession, but I really like it.
No, I'm sure it's rare. Mm-hmm. Do you know how many they made?
It was a couple thousand.
Wow.
So it's probably pretty collectible, but you know, I wouldn't pass it up for money. I just like owning it.
No, I understand. Well, Mike, I want to thank you very much for being on the show today. I think you provided some great, simple, but easy to follow steps to maintaining a non-union status. I appreciate all the work you do for the city of Portland and appreciate you being on the show today.
Thanks so much. It's my pleasure.